are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are.
You are.
Paul Strolley.
How are you?
I'm good.
I feel like I haven't seen you in 2 weeks.
Well, that would be about right.
Is that correct?
We had to do a rebroadcast. Because you were out of town.
I was out of town. I was in the magic that is Palm Springs.
Yes, and you didn't come back with a tan, though. What happened?
No, I didn't come back with a tan, because in the words of Woody Allen, I don't tan, I stroke. But it was hot. As they say in Biloxi Blues, it was like Africa hot.
Really?
Yes, it was hot.
So what is that, like
heroically
110?
Hot. 107, 108.
Wow.
So not as bad, nearly
but
as bad
you,
as Palm
you
Springs.
Stayed for quite,
I was in the air-conditioned Renaissance Hotel most of the time.
Nice.
Well, the film that I did, Beating, was included in the film market there at Palm Springs. And shared it with a couple of people. This short film I did on bullying and collateral victims of bullying, which is doing well on festivals. So,
fantastic.
And how was your week?
You know, good. It was busy. Certainly with the opening of the Hollywood Bowl, which was a big to-do on June 21st. And also the premiere of Jersey Boys, the film.
Yes.
Which we're going to talk about in our live arts calendar.
We'll talk about
both those things. But yeah, thanks for asking.
Okay. For right now, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Our first guest recently directed Honestly, Okay, the semi-true story of a girl and her shoes, which is right up there with one of my favorite play titles ever. I love the long, lengthy ones. You know?
Yeah.
What's the one that kicked it all off was For Color Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Was Enough. That was probably the longest title up until that point.
Was it? Really?
Yeah.
Up until that point.
Up until that point. There have been some since then. But I love long titles. Don't know why. Just quirky part of my personality, I guess. I'll just continue. He is co-artistic director of LA's acclaimed Celebration Theater, but he's also a brilliant actor in his own right, with credits including Little Shop of Horrors on Broadway, extensive TV appearances, and some of the country's most acclaimed theaters, including Steppenwolf, Victory Gardens, and San Diego Rep. Here to discuss his next directing project, The Max Factor Factor. Please welcome the lovely, the talented Michael Shepard.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Well, we're out of time, but it was nice having you, Michael.
You know what? As long as I get to make the ride and see the both of you, it's really worth it.
Is it?
Yeah, really, it's worth it.
Sweet talking guy. Yeah?
You just have to stop hanging out in the lobby. We've asked you about that before.
Well, between you two and Mother Love, it's like I got to be here all the time.
I'm hoping you're on Mother Love immediately after this show, and I mean her show. I don't mean in the
biblical sense. Well, I think people sometimes confuse me for Mother Love.
Is that really?
I am a wise old sage as well.
Are you?
Yes, I pass along a lot of information to my younger. To the younger generation.
She's a hoot, Mother Love. We think that we're good at this radio thing. Michael and I think we can hold our own.
And then you sit on
a Mother Love show and you're just like, I don't know what the F I'm doing.
You know what? I can't wait to meet her.
Oh, no. You're going to meet her immediately
She's
after
actually
this.
A very lovely, lovely woman.
She is lovely.
With very important things to say. Also.
And her husband, Kennedy,
a fine
gentleman as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And joining us later, Paul, in the hour, a young woman who was born in Brooklyn, New York, and earned her BA in musical theater at Wagner College on Staten Island. And during her career on the New York stage, she has written screenplays, dramas, sketch comedies, and sitcoms. Favorite roles of hers include That Other Woman's Child, Worlds Away, Gypsy, West Side Story, Bye Bye Birdie, and Antigone, which I'm going to say.
Well, let's go with Antigone. Let's just try Antigone.
I'm sorry, Michael.
Do it again, Michael.
Antigone also. also known as Antigone. Okay.
We're starting. The day. Oh, we should start like this.
Really?
We really should.
She has appeared with UCB in both Los Angeles and New York and is also a licensed.
That's UCBA, actually. UCBA. Right. Thank you, UCB.
Can I get on with this? Thank you.
Upright Citizens Brigade, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say UC Berkeley, but no.
Okay.
No.
No.
Glad I asked.
But they did an excellent production of Euripides. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yes, I did. In fact, I've done one of those myself. Yeah.
Euripides? Imendides. Hey, what is that joke?
Hey, before. Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah, a little slow on the uptake.
Also, she is also a licensed. I'm so sorry. She's also a licensed core fusion and Pilates instructor. She's here today to discuss her acclaimed one woman show. Italian Bread. That's B-R-E-D, as in breeding, not feeding. Please welcome Candice Guardino.
Candice!
Hello. Thank you.
Candice, I don't think I have ever, I apologize to you too, Michael, I don't think I've ever mangled anyone's intro as much as
that. It was very long,
one.
I gotta say.
It was long. It was long, but it was our fault. And
quite all right.
It was your credits for, should have been honored. My apologies.
I'll take Antigone any day.
There you go. I was just trying to, you know,
I'm on the
little humor. Mark.
What's I'm on the Antigone pill.
Really?
Yes.
Is it a cholesterol thing?
Well, yes, it is. Maybe I should take the Pilates.
Yes, totally.
It's Pilates.
Exactly.
So, Michael, yes. I know we touched on it earlier, but before we start chatting with Michael, what else happened to your week? It had to be. You met Mr. Eastwood, did you not?
I did.
Yeah?
Yes, I did.
How does he look?
It looks like an 80-year-old man would look. Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Okay.
That looks, very nice.
Yes, he is. Yeah. He's a very nice man on top of it. And. Yeah. Very charming. I must say that it was, it was a film premiere and an important one. You know, the paparazzi and the line, you're four deep, you're, struggling to, get the interview in the first place. But it was certainly well worth it. And more importantly, the film was for me and I apparently not for everybody, but the film is, I love the film because
really?
It stayed true to the essence of the musical on the Broadway stage, and yet it was done with great integrity and very artistically from Mr. Eastwood's point of view.
Yeah.
But we'll
I'm
talk
curious.
About that later,
yeah, no, because I have read incredibly mixed reviews on it. Very, very positive and very negative.
I think that these critics, that become critics and have to have a job to do, if they don't find something negative to say, then I think that they have a hard time with these things, especially musicals I'm referring to, not necessarily other types of films. And this, doesn't pretend to be anything other than what it is. It is a biopic, which is difficult to do, even on television. That's mostly corny on television.
Right.
It certainly can stand up, fine as a musical by itself. And I think that
it's not like the music is. The songs aren't there.
many of the complaints from the critics that there was no star power in the film. So.
But it has the delicious Eric Bergen in it.
Of course.
That's all you need is Eric Bergen.
Well,
as far
and
as
you
I'm
know
concerned.
What? It's his breakout role, this film. He does an amazing
job. We had Eric on the show a couple years ago, I think it was. And he's just a real captivating. I remember
he
just
is.
In person, just a very charismatic guy.
Very charismatic for being such a young man, too.
Yeah.
So
I'm often mistaken for the old Eric Bergen.
I've said that before.
Yeah, did we?
Totally.
Good.
Yeah.
If I close my eyes and just keep them closed.
Just keep them closed? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
my
look
goodness.
At the time.
Yeah. So glad to have you here, Michael.
If I close
the door
my
is
eyes,
that away.
If I close my eyes and just keep them closed, I'm writing that shit down.
Where's my pen? But
let's start with Michael, shall we? You want to give him his? I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
Yeah, no. That was it. No, because we'll talk about this later.
Okay,
the calendar. But yes, let's talk to Mr. Shepherd.
All right.
The Max Factor, written by Adrian Bewley, who wrote the book actually, Joe Blodgett, the music, and Channa. Am I saying that?
Hannah.
Hannah Wise, who wrote lyrics, is a screwball comedy that takes place in the 1930s about two rival movie studios whose leading men fall in love with one another. This show asks us to examine what kind of sacrifices we're willing to make for success or societal acceptance, says lyricist Shanna Wise.
Hannah.
Sorry.
I know.
Not having a good day here.
She wrote the musical of Antigone, actually.
Yes, I started it.
I like to call her Chana sometimes.
You do?
No.
I didn't think so. Oh, my. It doesn't take itself too seriously, though it is concerning a serious subject. But it's funny, it's charming, it's romantic, happy, nostalgic, and very tuneful. Today we have with us the director of this production being produced by the New Musical Initiative. Please welcome, once again, Michael Shepard.
Yeah. I feel like I should be on a boat. I want to say like a clever line, you know, like, you know, someone's laying on the floor covered in like blood and they go, well, that's going to be hard to clean up. Whenever that music plays, it's like, I always want there to be a clever line that someone's written for, because obviously my lines aren't funny.
It's just one of those ones where you just get the, it's the over the glass or into the glass line or over the newspaper line where just everyone else is doing all this work and you just lean in and say the funny one and then just...
That's all you need.
That's the best.
That's all you need.
Yeah. Into the glass line. How are you?
I am great. Very busy, but really good.
Max Factor. I told you in the green room before we started, I so wanted to audition for this. And I make jokes with Michael all the time that you know, I didn't audition because I had a conflict. I can't sing or dance. But the fact of the matter is I do sing and I'm getting back into singing.
And he does dance.
And I do dance, yes. Just, you know, pole dancing primarily. But
I miss you at Thursday's class.
Yes. Some big pull.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the subject.
Forgo the obvious joke there. But anyway, what would you start to say?
You made him lose his train of thought.
Sorry. You made me lose my train of thought.
We're talking about you auditioning for the Max Factor.
But I couldn't because I did have a scheduling conflict, assuming, you know, being super positive and assuming that I would have gotten in the first place. But it was looking through Actors Access and seeing that Jamie Rudofsky, our lovely friend who's the casting director,
who I adore,
was involved. But the premise is such a wonderful one. Could you give sort of the synopsis of the show for our listeners?
Well, basically what it is that two warring movie houses are trying to produce the same movie, and they pit their lead actors against each other. And what happens is when these two actors finally meet, they fall in love. And it's basically how do they continue this love affair in 1936 Hollywood and not be caught. And it's really fun and screwball-y, and, you know, there's not enough slamming of doors, but it is very, very funny.
So it's almost farce. So not if a four more door slams, then it would be farce.
It would be if I had real doors. Yes.
Now, New Musical Initiative is an organization that was previously named, had a different name.
Academy for New Musical Theater,
right.
ANMT,
and they changed it just recently, right?
Yes.
For what reason?
Because ANMT, Academy for New Musical Theater, always felt like a school. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like it was a place that was there to create new musicals, mm-hmm. which is, you know, their backbone. Mm-hmm. And they do a dang fine job of that. They create a bunch of wonderful things. And some of the programs they also have is like they do a 15-minute musical fair.
Right.
They have workshops on how to produce, how to create, you know, how to collaborate. And it's just it's run by Scott Guy and Elise mm-hmm. Dewsbury, who are just absolutely amazing to work with. They're the producers for the Max Factor. And you couldn't ask for better producers. The writers of this project.
So it's not a co-production with Celebration.
It is in association with the Celebration Theater.
Okay.
At the NoHo Arts.
Right.
Yeah. So it's NMI in a co-production with Celebration Theater at the NoHo Arts Center, opening August 1st.
Okay. We're going to call on you to say that again because
exactly.
I lost you.
Exactly. But it was originally Elise and Scott came to me I think maybe five years ago, and they were like, hey, we want to write specific musicals for specific companies. Do you have some ideas? And I tossed them some ideas. They presented three shows to me, and the Max Factor kind of stuck. It was like, oh, wow, that was great. And they've been workshopping it and doing readings of it for over the last 5 years. And they felt that it was, you know, now is the time to produce it. And because Celebration had recently lost its – we've recently lost our space,
right.
Which was, you know – I think we're getting very close to finding a new one.
Are you?
Yeah, very close. I can't say what, but we're getting very close. But, you know, they said, would Celebration be willing to do an association with? We weren't in the place to do a co-production, but we could certainly use all of our resources
sure.
to help push the show along.
Right? Yeah. And with a theater like Celebration that has just that sort of history, those are no small resources.
Especially our history with
following
musicals. We've done very well with musicals.
What sounds so cool about this, Michael, is that it's not only, you know, I'm all for screwball and madcap, and I love that stuff anyway, but it sounds like there's a heavy sort of dose of cool social commentary in this as well.
It is, you know, and it's also, what's one of my favorite moments, we actually blocked it the other night, is when they actually, the two leads, and I'm not, no spoiler alert here, but they go out on a date. There's this elaborate ruse that happens that gets them in the same room where no one else is around. And it is just magical because it's these two people in this very oppressive era of not being able to be who they are. And what happens when they get into a room and they know they're alone, and sort of how the romance blooms right there. And it's really quite lovely.
Wow. No, that sounds great. It's also sort of an interesting way to address a topic that had to be, you know, so difficult for men and women of that time, where they just had to live so closeted and were not able to just truly be themselves. I'm reading this fantastic book by Frank Langella called Dropping Names. Mm-hmm. And he talks about, have you read it?
I have. It's a great book.
It's a fantastic book. And it's just him. Every chapter is a different famous person that came in and out of his life. And the story he tells about Montgomery Clift is one of the saddest things
I've ever read
in my life. He has a 2 pages on Montgomery Clift, and it says, Montgomery Clift and I never spoke, and he never knew my name. But he lived around the corner, and he would be asleep and drunk in Frank Langella's vestibule. And he would just go in and pick him up and take him back to his townhouse, which was around the corner on 61st Street. And that was his relationship with Montgomery Clift.
Wow.
And it just was so heartbreaking. So it's just, it's a wonderful way to sort of, I mean, just from what you're saying, it's a wonderful way to sort of have a musical, have a comedy or something, but touch on some things that we shouldn't forget.
Absolutely. It's very important. You know, we should never forget our past and, you know, and what happened then. You know, it's like I keep going, I'm directing a musical set in 1936 where I didn't even have voting rights or could even speak in public. You know? So it's kind of this big deal that I'm, you know, I'm doing this type of musical. And,
you know, Michael, I look at you and I see, and I know we're going to talk to Candace about her one-person show, but I see a one-person show in you, and I don't know what it is. Do you have an idea? Because if you do, I would bankroll it.
I do have an idea. Do for you? My
He's
one person
several.
Show.
Do you?
I do.
What would it be?
I think it would be like an hour long, like music and story,
right? Like cabaret,
Okay, a little cabaret that I think I would title, you know, Michael Shepherd, the songs I would sing if I were a Negro. And just, like, you know, do, like, you know, a lot of Lawrence Hart and you know, Sondheim. So,
perfect.
And where would you do that show?
At Sterling's Upstairs.
At
the Federal.
There you go. Thank
How
you.
About
right
that?
Answer.
Yes.
How about that?
I'm telling you, I would front row. I would be for
songs I would sing if I were to Negro.
Songs I would sing. Get the URL right now. It's a long one, but get it.
Right.
Secure it.
His ability to sing is as powerful as looking at this man.
I know.
It all matches. Yes, yep. Absolutely.
It all matches.
It's all I got.
It's a match
Sorry.
Set. It's no, what comes out of your mouth is what one would hope comes out of your mouth when you sing. And it's a glorious sound. So
Thank
I'm
you.
A big fan of
Which
it.
Jen Ray told me.
Yeah,
Jen
exactly.
Ray told me. Our friend Jen Ray from Chicago said that.
Indeed.
So
you know, and you mentioned Lawrence Hart. He had the same difficulty during that time period as well, you know, being someone who wrote
Cole Porter.
And
yeah.
Cole Porter.
Yeah, the list goes on and on and on, you know.
So scary time for them, you know, to...
Did you ever hear the album Red Hot and Blue?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a wonderful collection.
Yes, it is.
I love that.
That was a fundraising album, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. No, I just love the covers in that. If, for those of you who don't know, it's Red Hot and Blue. It was all Cole Porter songs done by sort of current artists.
Pop stars.
At that time, that was 80s, wasn't it? That was in the
80s. Yeah, yeah.
I barely
Thanks
remember
for
the
pointing
80s,
that out.
And not because I was young.
I'll hit you with my walker. I will.
I'll take one of these tennis balls off and throw it at your head.
Oh, having a bout of the superior wit on that one. Tennis ball, get specific, just
you
gets
know,
funnier.
Specificity. Comedy.
It's amazing.
It works.
Well, you know, so, we should tell people, though, how they can you know, find out a little bit more about the show, because it hasn't opened yet.
Can you give us that lovely breakdown? You said it's the production company, and who's
the
doing
show
it, where
is
it's going on.
The Max Factor. Right. It is being produced by the New Musical Initiative, NMI.org. The okay. show will be at the NoHo Arts Center and is in association with Celebration Theater.
Okay.
You can also find the information at nmi.org or at the www.celebrationtheater.com. And theater is spelled with an R-E.
The correct way.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right.
Which we had a big discussion about that last time. Something said that theater R-E is the art and E-R is the building. Mm. But I don't know.
I agree with that. Yeah. R-E.
Yeah,
it's always been R-E.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I think so.
The other thing, too, which we always have to push here because we're in Los Angeles and it's a huge factor, but it's the NoHo Art Center. So you can,
which is a lovely place to go.
Well, not only that, but it's one of those great places. Park in one location, get there early. You got 5, 10, 20 different restaurants you can walk to.
Lots of food.
Bull and Truss.
Bowen Truss,
which is right,
amazing.
It's wonderful, and it's also owned by the same people who own the Federal.
Yeah,
yeah.
There you go.
The same people, and then
I'll be doing my late night show there.
Really?
Yes.
Really. And what?
I sing while I'm naked.
Yeah.
It's Michael. Trust,
well,
isn't it?
Sheets to the wind. Yes.
Well, in my trust.
In my trust. Yes. In God we trust, actually.
There we go.
Before we...
But wait. I'm pushing two other restaurants while we're there.
Oh,
the Federal, have the fish and chips.
Yes, of course.
Go to Pitfire and have the sausage and fennel pizza.
That's amazing.
And their bean soup.
And their white, the Tuscan bean soup.
Pretty awesome.
And don't go to Tokyo Delves because it is the most annoying sushi restaurant I've ever been to in my life.
It's a total party atmosphere.
I'm 30 years too old for Tokyo Delves.
You have to be young, crazy, wild, stupid. You want to have to dance on tables. You have to do all those
and
things.
I'm not young. That's what you're
saying. Well, you're young.
I'll be there.
But the crazy, wild, stupid. But the Indian place there, and also, what is that? There's a pub there that does sausages, homemade sausages. It's a little inlet. It's like right next to, as you're walking down Lancashire off Theater Tribe, the District Pub, I think it's called. And it's all craft beers, but they make their own sausages there. And all these gourmet sausages.
Oh, my gosh.
And they have these sides with horseradish cream or sautéed onions. And then they also have giant Bavarian pretzels.
You're selling this very well. I'm going to go.
Tell you. It's phenomenal. So anyway, that's my culinary pitch.
Well, you did a nice job.
Thank you. Well, I'm Italian. Food matters.
That's true.
Would agree to.
We should have recorded. We'll record everything you said.
No, now I take the recording and I go in and I say, can I get a gift card?
Food, please.
Right. Look what I did for you.
Look what I did.
I like you, too.
Food card, please. Mr. Shepherd, before we go to the arts calendar, about his the play that he directed at the Fringe. Honestly, okay. This is my story.
Oh, you have to tell Michael the causal event for that show.
Because Nicole Dominguez, who I know, happens to be involved with that production.
Well, she wrote it.
Yeah.
It's her life story.
Yes.
Basically, it starts how the whole thing starts off. It's her parents find a letter from her girlfriend, and she's at 17 years old. She's kicked out of the house, and she ends up walking the mean streets of Pomona. You know, after being kicked out, and a woman literally pulls up to her, asks her, says, you're pretty. What are you doing on the street? She goes, she was kicked out. The woman says, what size shoe do you wear? She goes, 9. And the woman goes into the trunk of her car and pulls out a pair of clear stiletto heeled come do me pumps and takes her to the Spearmint Rhino and gets her an audition. And she works there as a 17-year-old.
Being a
strip club.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
A strip club.
Now, Candace.
I'm sorry. Did you watch Candace's face during all of that?
I just picture my parents hearing this story. And I'm like, dear God, the clear heels.
A size 9 for a woman.
Oh, the size 9. Actually, that didn't trip me up as
much.
Okay,
maybe it's
time
a size 7. I'm sorry.
No,
Nicole,
it's okay.
Let's say 7. No, Nicole's
she was
taller,
one of the few water skiing strippers.
You know what's funny? We don't even find the clear heels a problem. We find the size 9 a problem. We're like, 7.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
Michael and I, we don't know from what is appropriate women's shoes. I mean, I'm a size 14. What size
I'm a size
are you?
16.
Mm. Are you?
Yeah. I've got 3 pairs of stripper heels in my closet as we speak.
16's hard.
Wear a size 16.
Well, you have
16.
To go to biggirlshoes.com.
Ah, there it is.
No. What are you, a men's size?
I'm a 14.
Oh, so am I.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would be a 16
in
women.
Right.
Just
wow,
in case
that's
you
good to know.
Yeah, just in case. just in case.
Yes.
Biggirls.com.
Biggirlshoes.com.
Yeah, there you go.
What was it, Chris?
You would get a very different website
Chris,
if you type that
Chris
in.
Chris Meehan, a friend of ours who grew up in San Francisco, he said, I don't want to say that we have a lot of transsexuals in San Francisco, but Victoria's Secret just opened a Big and Tall.
Oh, my. And there you have it. You know, I loved working in the Fringe. I think the Fringe is incredibly important to Los Angeles. It is starting to change the landscape of theater, which is actually really cool. Over the last few, I think this is his fifth year?
I think
this is the fifth year. And I know that in the first year, it was kind of people like, oh, Fringe. Yep. And now it's like after 5 years. It's like I've seen 8 shows. I never see 8 of anything because I'm always so busy. But because of the times I'm able to see other people's works.
Well, it's like 11 a.m. or it's 11 p.m.
Yeah,
or
so it's great. So I can see, you know.
Candice, Italian Bread is part of the festival too, isn't it?
It's not a part of the festival.
Oh, it's just running at the same time.
The Hudson Theater is a participant of the festival, and our show was actually picked up during that time. So we were really happy to be a part of it in that way, that we're sharing the same space.
By the way, I love your poster.
Oh, thank you.
He said your name. I was like, why do I know that? And he said Italian Bread. I was like, oh, I love the poster because it's in the window. Yeah. It's a great poster.
I love it. The logo, it's actually my mother.
We will actually put it on our...
And that's my father's crucifix chain.
We will put it on our Facebook page, and it's facebook.com, State of the Arts LA. We'll actually throw the artwork for both shows up there. But Michael, I'm going to kick off our arts calendar, and then we'll be able to chat with Candice here.
Yeah.
So I will start it, if you don't mind. Relive the iconic and magical moments from the Oscar-winning movie Ghost in a brand-new Broadway musical. Ghost, the musical, breathes glorious new life into a timeless love story. The musical features an original pop score from multi-Grammy Award winners Dave Stewart, one half of Eurythmics, as many of us know, and Glenn Ballard, co-writer with Alanis Morissette on the multi-platinum album Jagged Little Pill, which was truly one of the top 10 albums, I think, of all time. Among many other notable credits and collaborations, the musical's tale of everlasting love is thrilling entertainment for audiences of all ages.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I agree with that.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Did you want to continue, or do you want me to take the rest of it?
I will continue. I'm sorry. I was
Michael
and I were having a moment over here.
Okay.
I like our moments. Thank you.
Adapted from the hit film by its Academy Award-winning screenwriter Bruce Joel Rubin, Ghost the Musical follows Sam and Molly, a young couple whose connection takes a shocking turn after Sam's untimely death. Trapped between two worlds, Sam refuses to leave Molly when he learns she is in grave danger. Desperate to communicate with her, he turns to a storefront psychic who helps him protect Molly and avenge his death. Ghost opens this weekend at the beautiful Pantages Theater in Hollywood and plays through July 13th.
I'd realized that I put that in there, and then as you were reading it, I was like, this is for the 9 people who haven't seen Ghost, because it's just...
This is Molly, the musical. You in danger, girl.
Seriously.
You in danger, girl.
Which is the name of my dog.
Aww.
Her name is Molly, you in danger, girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what's on her certificate.
Really?
Couldn't help it.
Oh.
you've seen
girl.
Ghost.
Oh, yeah. I can quote it word for word.
Oh, man. Oh, that's, well, I hope I get to see it. I hope I get to see it and review it. I'm going
to
try to get in there.
To get tickets there, you just go to HollywoodPantages.com.
And what do? You park once. You go across the street to the W. Is that it?
Well, you park at that parking lot that is just east of the W.
See, this is the inside
the
information.
Well, yeah, because it's only $10. Otherwise,
and you can also pre-order those parking tickets.
Oh, you can.
You can pre-order those and print them out at home and just drive right into the lot.
Oh,
really? And
really?
You can pre-order
the one that's like across the street from the W.
On the east side. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
And if
telling us something we didn't know.
You can also pre-order an intermission drink at the Frolic Room, which is right next door, which is truly one of the great dive bars in all of Los Angeles.
It's a definite stop in bar.
It also has that great scene with Kevin Spacey from L.A. Confidential took place.
Oh, was that there?
It's right at the Frolic Room, Dean Martin's playing. Very memorable.
It's no Jumbo's Clown Room, but it's really
few good. Things are Jumbo's Clown Room. Yeah, yeah. That's
Jumbo's Clown Room.
Oh, yeah. A strip club on Hollywood Boulevard.
You've never been to Jumbo's Clown Room?
I have not, sir.
And I will have to go.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they know me by name.
They have the clear heels there for you.
They do.
I love strip joints. I do. I think they're just, it's a fascinating array of people that go there. I love them.
If we have time at the end of the hour, I'm going to say why I don't like strip joints, and it involves the first time and only time I went, but I don't want to eat into Candace's time with sorted things. Did you have anything else to say, Michael?
Well, yes, I did.
Okay, I'm sorry, because I don't know what you addressed at the front, but the floor is yours.
Okay, yes. No, I just to finish up with Jersey Boys, you know, performances by the stars of this show, which were all the fellows that did it either on Broadway at some point in time, especially John Lloyd Young, who created the role of Frankie Valli.
Won the Tony.
And won the Tony Award, yes. And Eric Bergen, we mentioned, as Bob Gaudio, who plays the songwriter, the composer of the music. Michael Lomenda, who plays Nick Massey, who did the national tour, and Vincent Piazza, who plays Tommy DeVito, and Renee Marino, who plays Mary Delgado, the wife, who was pretty spectacular in the film as well. And she did it on Broadway, and she did it in Vegas, as did Eric as well. Eric did the U.S. national tour, too. And a beautiful performance by Mike Dole, who plays Bob Crewe. And there's a lot of information there that I never even knew existed, you know, in the story. So all of these people, including the lovely actor, oh my gosh, his name just went right out of my head here. Hang on one second. For the character actor.
Christopher
Walken. Oh, Christopher Walken.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Hey!
Perfect. That's a perfect person.
Well, you know, he's like the angel on this, if you want to put it in a nice way, the angel on Frankie Valli's shoulder. He watches after him. He makes sure that nothing really happens.
He's a mobster, though. Yeah,
yeah, he is. Oh. But a sentimental one. Yeah. But
mobster with a heart of gold.
Help this movie out, ladies and gentlemen. Go and see this film. It needs to be seen, and it's not doing well at the box office, quite frankly. Well, so it's a shame, huh?
But it'll do very well on rentals and that, because, I mean, not that we should be talking to those things, but I for one, those are the DVDs I buy if they're musical. Those are the ones I buy because I don't want to end up hating movies I love through replaying them. But you never get tired of music. You never get tired of
music. Well, this music is so reinvigorated, you know, orchestrally for this production, too. It's very exciting. I mean, the arrangement is the original arrangement, but it's all amped up with, you know, new instrumentation and so forth. It's beautiful. Aside from that, Hollywood Bowl, opening night, June 21st, which is a brief thing in honor of that evening. You know, they have their 93rd season this year.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and 15th Hall of Fame inductions. And this year inductions were including Kristen Chenoweth and Pink Martini and the Go-Go's. And I interviewed all of them. And also people like Helen Hunt, who was giving, Carol Burnett, who was giving Kristen her award.
Oh, wow.
And some lovely, lovely people that came through. Nigel Lithgow, who's quite a lovely man with a lot of money.
A lot of money. Yes. A lot of money.
To get him to your theater to see something and have that.
Well, he has his own. His family has their own theater.
Well, they... Not their own
theater, but their own theater production company.
Yes, but you know, he could be possibly persuaded.
Nigel Lithgow, are you listening? My name is Michael Shepard.
Hello.
You can find me pretty much anywhere you are.
He's the one in size 16 pumps.
Yeah, I was going to say in Clear Heels.
But more importantly, they raised $1 million for the programs of the Los Angeles Philharmonic, which extend to youth, and they were represented by the Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles that did an amazing performance during the evening. And all of these inductees all performed during the evening. And Lea Michele was a guest star, a surprise kind of guest star, to sing with Kristen from Wicked. Yeah, so it was a great evening, and
it was
beautiful looking, and the fireworks were beyond.
All right. Cool.
So there was that.
All right. Well, let's, you know, just reminded me of something. You said Vincent Piazza, was the name? Yes. That's why this is why the segue is good. The Italian language is so much better than our language.
Oh, yeah.
Because if Vincent Piazza lived here, his name would be Vinny Square. Because that's what
totally.
It is.
Totally. Or Vinny P.
Yeah. Right. Or Giuseppe Verdi, Joe Green.
Yeah,
totally. That's what his name would be, Joe Green. Directed by Donna Drake, Italian Bread will play through June 29th at the Hudson Theater main stage. Candice Guardino makes her Los Angeles debut with this funny and heartwarming solo show, sharing personal stories and singing iconic songs while impersonating various members of her family. Additionally, the show includes virtual celebrity appearances. I think this is a great idea. From Mario Cantone, Steve Sciarripa from Sopranos,
that's
right?
That's correct, yeah.
Emmy Award winner Leslie Jordan, a guest of our show. Vic DiBattista from Mall Cop and more. Combined with the nostalgic scent of Sunday dinner, which I'm curious about, Italian Bread will remind audiences of their unique upbringing and unforgettable childhood memories. Please welcome Candice Guardino.
Aw, thanks. sit down, please.
The scent? Prepping. The scent of Sunday dinner? Is it smell-o-vision?
Well, sort of, yeah. I actually, when I was a kid, I saw the Broadway show 9, and they pumped smells into the theater, and I told my mom, because she would take me to see Broadway shows a lot, I would say, when I get older, I'm going to make a show, and I'm going to pump smells into the theater. And she was like, yeah, okay. And then when I got the opportunity, the theater smells like garlic when you walk
the
in.
The theater smells
absolutely.
Like garlic.
Oh, I'm not telling awesome. You how, but absolutely.
Because there was a one-man show, which I think, Michael, you did PR for before I did mine mm-hmm. at the Tamarind. There was a one-man show about an Italian guy called Behind the Counter with Mussolini. was the name of it, because his father
was starring Marco Greco.
And he made mozzarella during the course of the show.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Actually,
it's a food thing.
It's a food thing. I think the first thing you think, you hear Italian people, and you're like, food. Sunday, right. or just something to that effect. Right. So for me, the smell of garlic is literally, it's in my body. It's on my family's hair. Like, it's a joke, right. but like literally it's all over the place. So for me, that smell had to be very, very important when we first start the show.
So what's the causal event for the show? I mean, even though we grow up with our own families, what was the thing, what was the moment that made you decide I'm going to ruin my relationship with these people by
impersonating? I didn't want to talk to anyone anymore. So I figured I'll just write this show. No, actually I wanted to create a story and also a group of characters that were multi-generational and relatable for further development of not only a stage version, but a sitcom and screenplay, which is now in the works. It's something really exciting to watch and say, I know that grandmother, or my aunt is just like that, or I know a family like this. And that, for me, it's important to make people feel a certain way. Right. So when I started writing this, I said, I hope people really feel that they know these people that I'm impersonating.
Right.
And also, it was a lot of fun to impersonate these people.
And how high is the exaggeration factor?
It's not that high at all.
Really?
Which is great. It's awesome. Okay. Because people are like, oh, it must have been really hard, like, trying to figure out how to impersonate your mother. I'm like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's very easy. It's called Purell. It's called vomiting. My mother vomits over everything. And it's really high voice. It's easy. And it's a really
thick
accent.
Wait. We're going to touch on that.
Vomits over everything.
Really?
Yeah. She's very nauseous about everything. She's always like, oh my God, Candace, don't touch that. And then she's going to vomit.
Really?
Everything is about vomiting.
Really?
Yeah, she's very like, oh my God, that makes me sick. Don't go in there. Don't go to New York. Don't touch the subway bar. Don't do anything. Like, it's all very big, you know. My mother's main goal as the character is she just wants to do good. She just wants to do good for the kids and for the family. And then there's Grandma, who's probably the best character, I think. She's the complete opposite. She's like, you know, throw her out there, and she curses like a truck driver. Yeah. At 6 years old, she spoke to me like I was a 30-year-old woman. Yeah. So I didn't grow up like, hey, you get to go to and hit baseball until you hit that baseball. Like, I can't explain it. Like, I have like nieces and nephews, like they go and play on teams, and they're allowed to go up to bat, and they're allowed to swing until they hit. I mean, I didn't come from that.
No.
My grandmother was like, three strikes, you're out, kid. Get in line. That's how I grew up from her. So she's really...
You not only lose and miss it, but you then get berated for missing.
Absolutely. Like,
gives
she'd
you
like,
thick skin?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a big part of the show, too, is how I grew up very thick-skinned.
How many siblings do you have?
I only have one. I have a younger sister who is against... People are like, she has like three scenes in the whole show, and people are like, I love that character. I'm like, she's got three scenes. Oh. And everyone is obsessed with this character. She speaks in a Valley High School type voice. I don't know why. She just does. And,
can you
and
give
she,
us a little bit of it?
Sure. She doesn't pronounce my name correctly either. My name's Candace, and she calls me Kenneth. And everything looks such a problem. I'm like, I don't understand. That's Kelly. Till this day.
So it's her mindset. It's just the way you hear her?
Nope. It's actually true. Because
she does sound
which is even better, because people after the show try to stay and meet me. But more importantly, they don't actually want to meet me. They want to ask me questions about the family. So Kelly was there one night, and a crowd of people came up to me, and they said, oh my God, she really liked that, and she's standing next to me. So I said, well, you can ask her. This is my sister. And they asked her, and she's like, oh my God, I'm totally not like that. I didn't have to speak. I'm like, this is great. So I really didn't offend her either, because...
That's the only thing that when... Because I did a one-person show called Straight Up With a Twist, and I did my impersonations of my family as well. And my brother was the only one, because I had him a little more heightened than the rest.
Right.
And because he's a little bit of a chooch, he's that guy, you know. And he's brilliant. He's a brilliant man now, but he still has that little sore thing.
Yeah, that's my dad.
And I just, you know, everyone was cool with it. My mother was just like, she would receive people.
Don't excuse your mother.
And she would just be, yes, I'm the mother. She would just receive people.
But my
brother was just like, I don't know, Paul, it was funny. It was funny. I remember it was funny. But I saw some extra room in the program. And maybe if you got some extra space, you just put, you know, just note that these characters are extremely exaggerated.
I love, like, the family's opinions. Because my father's opinion was, like, before I did the show in New York, his opinion was, like, just don't be bad.
Yeah, right.
That's it? That's all you got? He's like, because if you're bad, then I got to explain. I was like, okay.
Right.
So I was good, so it was all right. I, like, survived it.
If it's bad, it's bad. His problem.
Yeah. And then my mother would, like, send me notes. She still does this, by the way. She sends me notes backstage. You don't need to go out there. I can always tell them that you don't feel well. Like 5 minutes before curtain.
You know,
I'm like, Mom.
That's just it. Is it encouragement or is it really, you know, what is that?
My mom's a very nervous person. Like, till this day. I mean, I grew up singing and dancing. And she would come to the recitals and she'd sit in the back and hide her face. I knew where my mother was because the face was hidden and there'd be two fingers underneath and you'd see her whistling. But she'd whistle looking down because she didn't want to know what was going
on. Why was she whistling?
She's very nervous. Oh, but she likes to whistle. She's a good whistler. She's the whistler in the family.
Wait, so does whistling somehow supplant vomiting? Does, like, the act of whistling?
I don't know. But she vomits over everything. Like, the whole scene in the first, in the very first scene in the show is making meatballs and how I learned to make them. I did not learn from my mother. I learned from my grandmother because my mother couldn't touch the meat. She was vomiting the whole time in the corner. Like, it's just disgusting and she doesn't want to touch it. It feels gross. And my grandmother relates meatballs to some other things in life. And that's how I learned about certain things. Okay. I can't say. It's very funny. And I was only 6 years old, by the way. It wasn't like I was 13.
Oh, yeah. No, mm-hmm. There's not a sort of... There's not a real editing in the... Well, I imagine a lot of cultures, but...
No, there's no editing. Absolutely.
Same thing for me.
It's a lot of fun, these
people. What
about
you, Michael? Were you guarded, raised?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, you know, but in a different way. We were very Catholic, and it was all about...
So were we.
It was all about being Catholic.
Only on Sunday.
All about the church and being very social and, you know, kind of a pretend thing.
Absolutely. My mother says, Candace, you always have to go to Sunday Mass at churches like St. Pat's. St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. And I never understood why. And when I got older, she said, because the nicer the church, the closer you are to God.
Nicer the church.
Interesting.
Wow. And I'm in trouble then.
I mean, I laugh about these things because I just love the mentality. You know, it's great.
You and I are in the same cab to hell.
I want to go to hell. It's like the guy who shoots the Pope. This is a man who says, I want to go to hell and I don't want to wait online. I want to get right through.
Absolutely. Exactly. Well, this is the grandmother character. It is that way. She doesn't understand it.
And your family is still, where are they?
They're in New York.
They're in New York.
Yeah. Still in Brooklyn? Bensonhurst? Still Bensonhurst?
They moved out. Please, they made the migration. They went from Bensonhurst to Staten Island.
Okay.
I grew up mostly in Staten Island, which is just amazing because it's its own little bubble. I mean, if you haven't gone, you got to go.
Yeah.
It's the best place ever. And then they moved down to Jersey, as my mother says, the country.
It is the Garden State. It is the Garden
She's
State.
She's like, we live in the country.
We live in the country now. Yeah. There's no sidewalk.
No, it's great. There's some cows, Candace, behind the house. I'm like, but they're doing lovely and they're over there.
There is only one more opportunity to see Italian Bread.
Yes, tonight and Sunday. Two more. Yes,
two more. Okay, two more. So tonight and Sunday. And tickets are available online at plays411.com/Italian Bread. Please remember that there's no A in bread for the URL. plays411.com/Italian Bread. Or by phone, you can call 323-960-7774. And the Hudson Theater is located 6539 Santa Monica Boulevard in beautiful Hollywood. And we'll try to throw that out one more time before the end of the show.
And Candace, has your family seen the show?
They have. They've seen it plenty of times. Yeah. And they're such big supporters, which is awesome. They enjoy it and they're excited because it really is a funny show, but it's got a lot of heart in it and it's got a lot of lessons. And it was important to me to create something that was funny yet had heart and had depth. These characters have real layers to them. They're real people.
Well, you know, and I think that's the mark of a good one-person show. Because everyone has that sort of feeling of their family, mm-hmm. their love. I mean, a great deal of people, those that are lucky enough to feel that way. But to take it and to put it on a stage mm-hmm. and make it a piece of entertainment, you yeah. need to go below the surface. You need to Absolutely. Present the audience with something more.
And to make the audience feel like they are 25 people up on stage with me on Sunday dinner yeah. with just being one person, for me, that was a little bit of learning how to be all these people very quickly. Physically, I don't pick up props. I don't put a hat on to be dad. There's no props. It's just a chair and, you know, a garbage can. We call it a day. Oh, and a video screen. And thanks to my lovely virtual cameos that jumped in. They were awesome.
Oh, that's
Mario and Steve and to be a part of the show.
Now, how do you worked with either of them before?
I haven't. They read the script. They fell in love with the idea. They fell in love with the actual brand and the excitement of the future of it. And they were like, please, can we be a part of it? And I was thrilled because they fit these characters so perfectly.
It's a great idea.
It's kind of funny. Me talking to this TV screen, but looking out to the audience. Right. My mother was like, I know you're cheating. You can hear them in your ear. I'm like, Ma, no, I studied. And she's like, no, I know you're cheating.
You're cheating. I'm sorry. That's cheating.
My grandmother smokes and she vomits. It's great.
Oh, it's that time. We got 5 minutes.
Goodness.
Yes,
we have to baptize you now.
It is the time for us to ask both of our guests to share a story of embarrassment of either during performance or, most interestingly enough, the story that Michael told the first time he was on our show last year involved being in white pants with no underwear.
That's right. Oh, that's right.
White pants, no underwear, and queasy.
And queasy, yes. Yes.
Don't forget about that part.
Yes. Well, I was trying to leave that out
yeah.
because I didn't want to.
That's okay. Thing.
Oh, so your mother, not you.
Well, sometimes I vomit.
but you said you had, before we get to Candace's story, you said you had one involving an audition, a nightmare audition. Sorry?
I just recently had an audition for Masters of Sex, so you know
with
where this
Jamie
is going.
Rudofsky.
The lovely Jamie Rudofsky, and I prepped for this thing, and I was like, okay, I'm coming in, I'm fully prepared, and I walk in the room, and I go in, I introduce myself. I already knew Risa, who's also the casting director, and Jamie are in the room. Say, thank you for having me in. I go to sit. There's a chair placed right there. I go to sit down in the chair. The chair collapses. I fall over on the floor. And I lay there and I start the scene. Because there's nothing. And by this time,
brilliant.
I see my dear friend Jamie Rudofsky with her head in her hands laughing. I'm like, so what do you do? What do you do? I'm on the floor. I am 6'6", 270 pounds, laying on the floor in a tiny audition room with a broken chair.
OMG.
You just move on. You just move. You take your black self and go.
Yeah. Make it work.
Molly, you're in danger, girl.
You're in danger, girl. You'd have come and broke the chair.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So Candace's story is what about going in and loosening bolts on chairs in audition environments.
Oh, my God. Mine's actually about falling as well, but maybe not as funny. But the very first job I got, I was still in school at the time, and I got to play all the voices of Blue's Clues on tour live.
Yeah.
And when I got there, they put me on a plane and I got there. And of course, it was like, you have to hurry up and fill in. And I didn't get any rehearsal. And they said to me, well, you do all the voices. So you're in a microphone backstage. It's not like you have to worry about it, except one scene. You play the cupcake. And I said, well, how do you play a cupcake? Oh, we put you in this big costume. All you got to do is stand up. And I said, okay. So I put the costume on, not knowing it's a big harness with a cupcake around you. The costume weighed about 200 pounds. So I couldn't stand backstage. I said, what do I do? He goes, go down on one knee, then try to stand. I said, okay. So I figured it out. I kind of got up. So I walk out on stage and Blue, the dog, and Joe, it's like a really important part of the show for the kids. And they go, and now Cupcake's here. And I'm supposed to stand up. And you have a radio that can radio for help and you can switch. And I switched it off to I thought I switched it on to talk backstage. I switched it off to talk on stage. So I go, guys, I can't get up. Oh, my God. And then I fall. And then you see my feet. And I'm in this big cupcake thing. And I'm twisting from side to side. And my feet are facing the audience. And the kids start yelling, help, Cupcake, up, help. And everyone tries to help Cupcake stand. So that was pretty bad.
Help, Cupcake.
Oh. I was like the big, and I had like white tights on. It was like the worst thing ever. And then I remember getting off stage and being like, well, I guess it can't get any worse.
John Pignette, the phenomenal stand-up comedian. Yes. John Pignette, who does the whole You Go Now. He passed away recently. He was a very, very heavy set
guy.
So
talented.
And brilliant man. And he does the whole thing about the Chinese buffet. Just, you know, you go now. You here 4 hours. You know, it's like, but he does a great thing about, he goes, my friends would give me tequila and then we'd go skiing because apparently I'm more fun skiing. He goes, and the first time I did, just down the hill in this pile of snow, and kids just walk up and just go, Frosty's dead.
There's something about falling that just,
oh, there's nothing as funny. There's nothing as funny.
I know.
Nothing is as funny as falling. My brother was working for Pepsi Cola, and he was one of the top computer guys at Pepsi, and he went in to ask the president, CEO of Pepsi, for this ridiculous amount of money to overhaul their whole computer system. He stands up after this meeting, falls down on his face because his right leg has gone numb. So his leg fell asleep. He fell down, and that's bad enough. Then he sits back on the couch, and the guy's like, oh, you okay? Sits there for 5 minutes, stands up, does exactly the same thing again.
Oh, my God.
Falls twice inside of 3 minutes.
So embarrassing.
Embarrassing.
But you get through it. You learn.
You do. You
learn.
Thick
skin.
Wow. Well, we're almost out of time, aren't we? So just as a reminder, the Max Factor Factor coming up in at the NoHo Arts Center, July 26th through the 31st of August, directed by Michael Shepard, our guest. And you visit the website to get
NMI.org. NMI.org.
He said it very well, Michael.
And also Italian Bread.
Italian Bread.
I'm going to give a little more on that. Plays411.com/Italian Bread. That's Italian B-R-E-D for tickets. Two more performances or phone 323-960-7774. But to follow the journey of this show, you can go to Facebook.com/Italian B-R-E-D 1, or you can check out Twitter, Italian Bread Show. Once again, bread is B-R-E-D. So you can follow the journey of this show, which I'm sure has a wonderful long life.
And of course, excuse me, Ghost the Musical.
And Brenda Vaccaro has joined us.
Ghost the Musical at the Pantages in HollywoodPantages.com. Get your tickets. It opens this weekend.
A pleasure having both
thank
of you on.
You
thank you for having
thank
me back.
Michael, thank you, Candace.
Thank you.
And thanks to Ken Werther and, and to Lee.
Thank you.
All right, Michael, see you next week.
Thank you, sir. On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.